This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. In today's Moneybox Live podcast, we're looking at giving someone lasting power of attorney. That's the authority to manage your financial affairs in the event that you couldn't. Now, the idea of giving up power and control over our lives can be an intimidating thought, even if it's to a loved one. But it can be even scarier to navigate difficult times without having that support in place. And you have already sent us a lot of questions on this. After Paul Lewis covered lasting power of attorney on the Saturday programme, our inbox was almost overwhelmed. And what we're going to do today is answer as many of those questions as we can. Before we hear from our experts, though, I wanted to get a sense of why power of attorney matters so much. And there is one person who's done a huge amount to raise awareness, Joan Bakewell, the journalist, TV presenter and Labour peer. At 91, she is still working hard, encouraging more people to plan for their later years. And I spoke to her before we came on air.
I think as you get older, you're less able to make decisions. You delay and you also your memory fails. You can't remember whether you've done things or not. So it's important to entrust that decision to people who are much younger and more mentally agile.
Now, it can be really hard to think about older age, to think about losing the ability to make decisions yourself. Do you think that's what puts people off?
I think people don't like to imagine that they're going to die one day, but it's true of all of us. So it's sensible to think about it while you are still in control. The important thing that people fear as they get older is losing control of their lives. If you have someone whom you can trust, then you can vest that control in them. It's very important that, of course, you have a good relationship with the people to whom you do that and don't have family quarrels that can get in the way. So you need to be quite astute about it and also perhaps build in safeguards about checking things out every so often.
Can I ask, have you arranged for someone to have power of attorney if it was needed?
Yes, I have. I've discussed with my children the process of getting old and how much they will be responsible for looking after me. Of course, it's very important. Otherwise, we drift into a vague, insecure hinterland, not knowing where we are. We need support. We need support of those who love us. That's the most important thing we can have in life.
Did you have to think hard about who to ask to be your attorney, or was it just obviously going to be your children?
Oh, it's obviously going to be my children. We're a very close family, so I know I can trust them. I know that they're not after my money or anything like that, which greedy families often have as a problem. So I did trust them. I did talk it through. I've still got enough astute attention of my own to analyse what the situation would be. I've got a lawyer I can consult if I need, an accountant. I take good care to think these things through, but I also know I could go to Citizens Advice or local health authorities to consider what help they could give, go to the local library, find out what the documents, the little leaflets that you can get to tell you all about it. So there's help available for everyone.
And finally, NHS data released just this week showed a record number of people being diagnosed with dementia in the last year. Do you think that makes arranging a lasting power of attorney even more urgent?
Yes, I do. I know a good number of people who are beginning to suffer the onset of dementia. It happens to many of one's colleagues as you get older and possibly you begin to dawn on yourself. So I do think it's important while we're still relatively young to make the sort of plans and think these things through. We're all heading to die at some point, and we're also going to decline in those final years. How we do it and how we manage it is worth considering while we're still able to make decisions.
National treasure Joan Bakewell there. And listening to Joan are today's experts. Here to answer all your questions, I'm joined by Sam Cox, who's Knowledge Officer at the Alzheimer's Society, and Melinda Giles, Partner and Head of Court Protection at Giles Wilson Law. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
An enthusiastic hello right back. Okay, Baroness Bakewell has banged the gong for why arranging lasting power of attorney is important. Before we go on and take a call, I want to just power through some of the stuff people have been asking us, the need to know stuff. So Melinda, Mike has emailed with some really important questions. He says, I'm considering granting power of attorney to a relative, but of course I'm currently fully capable. He wants to know, how does it work in practice? Does it come into operation immediately? And does granting power of attorney mean I have no power of my own left?
Yes, big question there and really important points. First of all, I would just like to clarify that a lasting power of attorney deals with either your finances and property or your health and welfare, and both of those only whilst you're alive. But a good question as to whether somebody can step in and take control when you're still able to do so yourself. For the financial power of attorney, you can actually trigger have a clause in there saying you only want them to be able to deal with your finances if you are no longer able, if that's very important to you. Or you can go ahead and register it and have it waiting there for if and when. And sometimes, in fact, there are circumstances when you are able. But as Joan mentioned, sometimes you just need a bit of extra support. And if you've chosen an attorney carefully and fully trust them, then actually they should work with you.
Thank you very much. And it doesn't have to come into operation immediately. You're not signing away absolute power of your life with no say yourself.
Absolutely not. For a financial power of attorney, as I say, it can be valid from the time you make it, but you can hold it back and remain involved. For health and welfare one, once it is made, the value of them is that actually the attorney does step in and make decisions that you are unable to make for yourself at that time. But it's not a blanket power. They don't take over your life. No one can take that power away from you whilst you're able to make those decisions.
Thank you very much. And I should say the rules for lasting power of attorney, they're slightly different in Scotland to the rest of the UK. A lot of what we're going to talk about is still relevant. But if you are in Scotland, you can check out the website mypowerofattorney.org.uk, which has a lot of information and is funded by the Scottish Government. Melinda, how much does it typically cost to arrange an LPA?
Well, as was mentioned previously, there's so many ways to do it. You can do it through a charity, you can do it yourself, you can do it through a solicitor. The one thing that is fixed is the fee that's payable to the court for each power of attorney, which is around £82 court fee. Although if you are on benefits, it's much less. The fee varies from probably a minimum of about £250 to quite a few more hundred. And that does depend how much advice is given, whether the solicitor is also perhaps what's called the certificate provider and is verifying that you fully appreciate everything that you're signing, which is a very important safeguard within the document.
Absolutely. And when you're mentioning means-tested benefits, paying slightly less for registering that LPA, some people on means-tested benefits can get an exemption or pay less if they earn below £12,000 a year, the Office for the Public Guardian told us. That's the government body that polices the system. Sam, I mentioned that report showing a record number of dementia diagnoses in England. I know firsthand that having lasting power of attorney is incredibly important when a loved one does fall ill. Is it something that you can set up once somebody has already started to succumb to something like dementia?
It is, yes. The important point is that somebody making a lasting power of attorney is still able to have what's called mental capacity. So it's the ability to make that decision. So that's knowing what, you know, what a power of attorney is, wanting to make it, and importantly, choosing who their attorney or attorneys are. And people in the early stages of dementia very often can do that. And that's why having an early and timely diagnosis is so important, and why that sort of report and the numbers from the NHS have been so crucial this week, because that allows people to make those plans. Because very sadly, for somebody with dementia, as time goes on and it progresses, there will become a time when they are unable to make an LPA because they don't have that ability, that mental capacity to make one. So earlier on is so crucial.
Thank you. I think one thing that we should reflect, we're getting quite a few emails in about just the extent of the job potentially of being somebody's attorney. One person, Philippa, has emailed to say, my uncle's filing system was non-existent with paperwork stuffed into drawers. I couldn't find passwords. My uncle was unable to give me any information. She says that the company's websites and telephone answering services didn't have any options for LPA inquiries. She filled out 6 forms over a period of weeks to have her uncle's council tax stopped. And she had to make a 20-mile round trip to the bank as there was no branch in town, and she wasn't able to do phone banking under her LPA. So it is a massive amount of work, which is definitely something to factor in. Let's take a call. Sue is on the line from Bradford. Sue, good afternoon.
Hello.
Thank you very much for being with us. Now, tell me about your parents, because you had financial lasting power of attorney for your father before he died. not for your mother, who is still alive.
Yes. So Dad was always really meticulous with all his banking and, you know, and thorough. And he was really keen that everything was left in order so that when he did die, you know, things would be straightforward for us, which was great. And that was just him. Then so he set up an LPA over 20 years ago, and the attorneys were me and my mum. But we never actually needed it. So what happened was Dad did his own banking for a long, long time, and then banking went online and he did it. And then as he got older, he struggled a bit with the online stuff, and I sort of gradually helped him, and it just kind of evolved so that in the end I was just doing all the banking for him, and I had his, you know, passwords, usernames, goodness knows what, for his current account, and did it all. And everything was taken care of. Then sadly my dad died around Christmas time, just gone. And we're in the situation now where mum has got dementia. I don't have LPA for her. And the bank accounts that were Dad's have gone transferred into mum's name. So I can't access those either.
Thank you so much for telling us about your dad, who's clearly very organised 20 years ago, thinking about this. What kind of impact has this situation with not having LPA for your mum had on you and your own finances?
Well, at the moment, so the current account that things were, that I was using, there are still some direct debits and standing orders going out of that. So some big amounts, such as mum's care, the fees for mum's care goes out of that. So that's really good. However, out of that current account, there are also going direct debits and standing orders that I need to stop. For example, Dad was really keen on sports and, you know, subscribed to the sports channel. Those need to be stopped. But there are, other than that, I'm just paying, really.
So out of your own pocket?
Yes, yes.
Oh, Sue,
yeah.
Thank you so much for telling us about your very, very tricky situation. Keep listening, because I'm going to put all this to our panel now. Sue, thank you for joining us. Sam, hugely difficult situation. I'm sure this is the kind of story that you'll hear a lot.
We do, yeah. And so, Sue, if we can help in any way, please do contact our dementia support line. Details are on the Alzheimer's Society website. There's a few things I can suggest. I think our panelist is going to talk about deputyship in a moment. But what I would say is, if your mum is on any state benefits, do contemplate getting something called appointeeship. And that is through the Department of Work and Pensions. And that means that you can at least access her benefits if she's got any, including sort of a state pension. And that might at least help, because, you know, you shouldn't be paying for this yourself. As well as that, talking to the bank. Some banks are better than others, and some will, you know, as you've seen, some direct debits, you know, you need to continue. Others you might be able to stop by having a discussion with that bank manager, and hopefully, you know, that would help a bit. And apart from that, without having a power of attorney, it is something called deputyship that you might want to look at getting now, which is a legal way of being able to access a bank account and manage affairs without having that power of attorney.
Sam, thank you. Go on then, Melinda. Explain deputyship and how you actually go about sorting that out.
Yes. So the outcome of a deputyship application is that it is a court protection order made that is like a power of attorney, but has to go through court. And even once it's set up, you don't have the same level of freedom as you do if you're acting as someone's attorney. You have to do accounts every year, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason for that difference is because the law sees it that, in this case, the caller's mother didn't make the choice as to who was to be her attorney. The court protection application can be made by anybody. That's one good thing. But it does take months and months and is very expensive and complex, I'm afraid. And sadly, there isn't a choice, because you will not be able to access that account without it, or indeed any other asset. One thing I would just make the point as well, because it was a joint account, it does fall into the survivor's name. So therefore, although we often talk about probate when someone's died, in fact, probate doesn't cover a joint account.
Because it's simply been passed on to the surviving spouse. Sue isn't alone, interestingly enough. We've also had an email from Gary, who's in the same situation as Sue, but both his parents are still alive, both have dementia, and he's worried that when his dad dies, he won't be able to manage his mum's finances. So clearly, this is the kind of issue that comes up a lot. Thank you very much, Gary and Sue, for sharing your stories. Now, our producer, Neil Morrow, has been out in Hyde in Greater Manchester, asking people if they've thought about lasting power of attorney. And he spoke to two friends who were out for a walk, Catherine, who recently lost her sister, but first of all, Helen.
I can tell you now, we've just got this LPA, they call it. When we've done it, felt relieved that we've done it. Told you.
Yeah, because we haven't, and I'm thinking, really, you know, we should do that. Yeah.
Is that right? It's one of those things that you keep putting off, not putting off exactly.
Well, yeah, because you don't get round to it. Yeah, yeah, you're just carrying on with your lives and you don't really want to think about it, do you? You know, you're getting older and it's still in the future life, but then something happens and you think, oof.
Well, that's
you know,
how I felt.
Yeah, it's something we need to do.
Does it give you a sense that if something were to happen to you, you're in fine form at the moment, but you just never know, at least there's an arrangement how it works?
There is, yeah. We've got all the paperwork, everything's signed up, the kids know everything. They were upset when we told them because they said, why are you doing that now? And, you know, it scares them a bit. Stephanie cried, my daughter cried. But we said everything's sorted and we were very happy about it.
Sam, really interesting to hear Helen talking about the impact just arranging it had on her adult children. In a way, I suppose this is almost like buying an insurance product. You hope your house won't burn down, but you have the policy there just in case it does.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, as was shared there in that clip, it is really emotive on both sides, the person making it and the person being appointed. And nobody likes thinking about death or about losing control and independence. But as you said, this is a just in case, and it can really help. You know, we heard earlier on, the other callers about how difficult it is when you don't have it. So this is about just making sure that things aren't complicated if this was ever needed. And as you said, hopefully it won't be, but it's a good thing to have just in case.
And Sam, we're talking about power of attorney. Can you explain to us what it actually is? Because you get a physical document, don't you, that sometimes different banks, building societies, financial services, they'll want to see that.
Yes, as you say, it's a physical document and it's actually the application form that was originally filled in, but it's been stamped on every single page to say that it is official, it's valid, it's been registered with the government. That's the Office of the Public Guardian that deal with this. And that's to say that it is, you know, it's legal and it's correct and you can use it. And yet every time, and this is what we hear from attorneys and what kind of should happen, is you've got to prove that you're the attorney. Nobody, you know, is going to take your word for it, especially on the important things to do with banks and, you know, property and finances. So every time somebody speaks to the bank, they very often have to show it, at least until they've got their attorney bank account sorted out. And again, speaking to other financial institutions, things like insurance companies, utility providers, attorneys will have to prove who they are. And there is, as I said, that physical document that can be shared, and many people get, you know, certified copies of that. As well as that, now there is a way in which somebody can share what's called an electronic code. So somebody can actually use an online system that the government have created to actually get a digital version. It doesn't give all the details. It just gives some details. But it is a way that attorneys can prove who they are and who they're acting for. And that can be a bit easier than having to post it.
It can be. In my experience, you share that and then you have to post the physical document anyway.
Yeah. Sometimes, sadly, that does happen. Although, I think it's a new system. Hopefully it'll, you know, people cotton onto it and start using it a lot more.
And of course, you don't want this to be too easy, because then we'd have a different program, because it would be, if it was too straightforward and too easy, it might be exploited. Right, we're getting so many emails in. They are popping into the inbox as we're on air. Let's just rattle through a few of them. Melinda, let me read you an email from David. He says, in my late 70s with substantial savings, I wish to appoint a financial attorney, but find that those friends and relatives I would feel comfortable approaching are also aging, and in some cases have already predeceased me. Is there a state institution I could appoint to act for me?
No, there isn't, as far as I'm aware anyway. And I think as well, it is the nearest thing to that is really using a professional firm, a solicitor or that has a good reputation, is professional. And although, of course, that does come with costs, this is all your, you know, all your money. This is your future at a time that you're going to need it to be, you know, be looking after you. And as you mentioned much earlier in the show, Felicity, it's an onerous responsibility being an attorney for somebody. You have a duty and an obligation to make all the right decisions about that person's money. So the best thing is to find a professional who is prepared to do it if you don't have a family member or a friend who can.
It is a lot of work, isn't it? Sam, how many attorneys should someone appoint?
It does completely depend upon the person and their setup. But what I will say is if somebody's only appointing one attorney and that attorney kind of jointly owns their home or any other assets they've got, do consider appointing more than one person, because being able to manage that while you own it and the attorney is a conflict of interest, is how it's seen. So that can be quite difficult, especially in terms of selling.
Okay.
A lot of people choose more than one attorney simply because then, you know, if one attorney's on holiday, the other possibly can still act and they can share that workload we've talked about. But what I will always say is if you appoint more than one person, please make sure they get on. We do hear some horror stories where, you know, people's attorneys don't get on at all, and that can make it really unworkable and, you know, and decisions not being made and things not happening that should be happening.
And you might, of course, choose to have a different attorney for your health and welfare power of attorney and your financial attorney. We're getting lots of emails from people who are worried that their loved one might be being exploited by somebody who has lasting power of attorney. So, Sam, one of these people says, occasionally when I've been at my mother's house and a bank statement has arrived, I've noticed things on my mother's account that don't sit well. Whilst my mother has not been left short at all, I do believe my two siblings who have had power of attorney have helped themselves for their own benefit and for their children, particularly out of my mother's surplus income. Sam, if someone has concerns about how an LPA is being managed, where can they raise those?
The best place to take that to is the Office of the Public Guardian. They've got a contact line that people can ring, and on that really outline exactly sort of as she's done in that email what's happening and where that sort of information and evidence will be, because then hopefully then they will investigate, and they investigate these things and you know a lot of the you know a lot of time and they do really look into it, and if they find that something is happening that shouldn't be happening, and they will then take action. So that might be in sort of a case where, you know, it's not too bad, they'd sort of help the attorney to kind of be better attorneys, or it could even be that they go to the Court of Protection and actually remove those attorneys and even look for justice for the person because of what's happened. But yeah, please do consider going to the Office of Public Guardian so that can be looked at properly. It's something we do talk about on our support line here at the Alzheimer's Society if you'd like to chat it through before doing that.
Right, let's hear from Martin now. He's in Skipton in North Yorkshire and he sent us this voice note.
Hi, Felice. Can you raise with your panel the issue of why people in England can't have a combined single finance and health and welfare lasting power of attorney? I expect most people end up using the same people, such as relatives, to be their attorneys for both health and finance LPAs. But currently, people have to complete two sets of quite complicated forms to set up two separate LPAs and pay two lots of registration fees. And, if they use a solicitor, pay two lots of fees to prepare two separate LPAs, rather than just having to complete one set of forms and pay one registration fee. I know many of my friends have been put off setting up LPAs because of this.
Thank you, Martin. Great question. The Office for the Public Guardian told us the Ministry of Justice has consulted twice on combining the LPA forms, and in both cases, the response was negative. In particular, people said they may want to appoint different people to deal with their health decisions compared to their finances. Melissa, that is a good point, isn't it? Some people might want one person making those health choices, but somebody else making that ongoing financial management decision-making.
Yes, I mean, my experience is that quite often people do choose different people, especially if they have maybe stepchildren or blended families, or perhaps, you know, the reasons I've had given are, oh, I wouldn't want that daughter to have to make health decisions. She would crumble and not follow my wishes. Maybe from a financial LPA's point of view, it may be not so much they don't trust their own child, although that's always possible. It may be the stage of their life that person is at or who they have around them. I agree that it's better to have two types, apart from the fact that the law is actually different as to when they can be used.
That is interesting, isn't it? Sam, Scotland actually does have slightly different rules. You can choose to have a combined lasting power of attorney or have them separate. I suppose the point is, it's definitely worth doing your research, perhaps ringing one of the advice lines and understanding exactly what it is that you need.
Yes, definitely. It's always individual. So I think having those conversations, working out what's best for you. Again, here we do see that people quite often appoint different attorneys for the different types, or they might have, different numbers for the different types as well. Because, there's often valid reasons why you might not want somebody acting as one type of attorney, but the other.
Useful to know. Thank you. Let's take another call. Lynn is on the line from Bedfordshire. Lynn, hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Thank you for being with us. Now, you are a great person to have in this discussion because you have been on both sides of the fence. You've worked for decades in a high street bank and now you're dealing with a lasting power of attorney yourself. What's your experience?
My experience was I'm fairly au fait with online banking, but I am getting older. I do online banking, and I decided, along with my husband, that we would nominate one another to be our attorneys, along with both of our daughters.
Joan Bakewell would approve.
Now, obviously, like I said to you, my big problem these days is not just myself, because I felt I knew what to do, but for people that really haven't got a lot of experience in this field, because I went into my local building society and it was not a problem. It was as smooth as it could have been. We've had letters back nominating both my husband for myself and the two daughters, and vice versa. So we had all the paperwork in place very promptly after we produced our local power of attorney to them. Now, the bank of which I was a retiree was a very different story, because when I went into the bank, and it's a big high street bank, there was a young lady that said to me, "Oh, what would you like to do today?" And I told her, and she said, "Oh, just a moment, I know nothing about that and I don't even know what it is. Right. I'll find a colleague," which, fair enough. The colleague came out and he said, "Oh, I'm not exactly sure. I'll have to take a photocopy and then I'll send it off to head office for you." Now, I know that he should have done the registration in branch, but I've been retired for 15 years and I'm thinking, well, things might have changed. 2 days later, I got a call from head office saying, "Why didn't I do the registration in branch?"
Oh, Lynn, how frustrating.
I explained to them. And then I said to the person, "Please do look on my profile and see who I am." And she came immediately back and her response to me was, "Oh, I'm so very sorry. We're getting this all the time as the branch staff just don't have the necessary training anymore." She yes. realised I was a retiree.
once she spotted that you'd been a professional, I'm sure that changed everything. Lynn, thank you so much for telling us your situation. Sam, I know what Lynn has been through. I once rang a bank and asked to speak to the LPA department. They put me through to the bereavement line. This is an issue, isn't it? Now, we put some of these issues to UK Finance, which represents the banks. It told us it does recognise the challenges some people face when using power of attorney. But they said there are regulatory rules that firms need to adhere to when opening accounts and registering a power of attorney. They know there's more to be done and they're working with members and government bodies to look at how greater consistency can be achieved across the industry. Briefly, what do you think is the issue here? Is it just down to training?
No, it's a lot more to this than training. I mean, it doesn't help that a lot of the training is quite quick e-learning when somebody first starts. It needs to be something that's continued. It needs to be a cultural shift where this is talked about in banks, in staff, in team meetings. It's a continuous thing. As well as that, there needs to be more than just a policy on it. I think the banks themselves need to do more. Not closing local branches, for example, would be really helpful. As well as, looking at, as you said, sort of their care lines, their customer lines and how that that is, it needs to be thought through on every single basis, and there needs to be a lot more to it. And also the things they offer attorneys need to be more, because some banks don't even allow attorneys to have internet banking, which is not helpful.
Very frustrating. Sam, we're going to have to leave it there. We're almost at the end of the programme. Melinda, very briefly, despite the challenges and the frustrations, this is still really important.
Absolutely. And it's the difference between us facing, just the same as we have to face our mortality, facing the possibility of our incapacity and losing our independence and control. And if that weren't bad enough to think about, then thinking that you won't have been the one to make the choice as to who is to take care of your finances and your health decisions. Place yourself in the position where you've chosen the person or persons you trust and talk to them about it.
In fact, we've had an email from Jamie who says, LPA is without doubt the ultimate measure of financial trust. Very true indeed. Thank you for that. Well, that is all we have time for in this Moneybox Live podcast. Thank you to everybody who took part. And thank you, of course, to our experts. We've been hearing from Sam Cox from the Alzheimer's Society and Melinda Giles from Giles Wilson Law. Remember, you can catch Moneybox with Paul Lewis on Saturdays at midday. And if you want to contact him, me or the team here, please do. We love getting your emails. It's moneybox@bbc.co.uk. In this podcast, the producer was Neil Morrow. The studio manager was Becky Marcus. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
I'm Tom Heap.
And I'm Helen Chersky.
A journalist.
And a physicist.
Ready to tackle the biggest issues on the planet. Each week on Rare Earth, a podcast from BBC Radio 4, we investigate a major news story about our environment and wildlife. We delve into the history. How on earth did we get here? We stir up the politics. Who's right and who's wrong? And we search for effective solutions to rising temperatures and collapsing wildlife.
In our new series, we'll be learning how to reduce the destructive power of wildfires. And we'll be hearing how the most vulnerable communities are trying to flood-proof their cities.
And we'll reveal the new phenomenon of green hushing. Companies no longer want to talk about the environment. They're worried that green activists will point out their hypocrisy, while right-wing critics accuse them of being too woke. Better to say, and perhaps sadly do, nothing.
Listen to Rare Earth on BBC Sounds.